Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Kevin Pierce and Bobby Scales, two young men growing up in Brighton. It's the 1970s. There's violence, drugs, racial tensions exploding around the busing crisis. But Kevin is destined to get out of the neighborhood and onto better things. Unfortunately, the same can't be said for Bobby. The two, however, are united by a terrible crime. They're separated, then brought back together in the early 2000s by another series of terrible crimes. Well, that's the alluring promise of Brighton, a new crime novel by Chicago writer Michael Harvey. And before you start yelling back at the radio, hey, what's some guy from Chicago doing thinking he can write about Brighton? Well, you got a point. I mean, Michael Harvey does live in Chicago now, but he is Brighton-born and bred, and he joins us. Michael Harvey, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That's Pocket great. Car and Harvard Yard. Still got the accent, so.
Yeah. We definitely acknowledge that you've got the full Boston, specifically Brighton cred. So it's great to have you, and thank you so much for this really fascinating book. It's engrossing, and I don't want to give away too much of the plot. I gave us some broad brush strokes here.
Yes,
But give me the quick story. What inspired you to write about your home neighborhood?
Well, you know, I wanted to write a neighborhood book, and I wanted to write a childhood book. And I knew it was going to be Brighton because that's where I grew up. I mean, it's I think when you grow up in those neighborhoods, they get into your bones, they get into your DNA, and it's just hard to get rid of it. And you know you don't want to get rid of it. So when I knew I was going to write that kind of book, I just figured it was going to be in Brighton. Mm-hmm. It was going to be where I grew up. You know, I was reading an interview from Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and he said that you know, your childhood is your childhood until it becomes something else. And for a writer, it becomes literature. And for me, it became the backdrop for the best kind of literature, which is a crime novel.
Yeah.
So I was really happy to do it. Once I started writing it, you know, my parents still live in Brighton and my family still lives in and around Brighton. Once I started writing it, all the Boston stuff was just right there. And so it was really interesting and fun book to write.
So you grew up in the exact same time period that the first part of the book is set, in the 70s in Brighton. Tell us, I mean, did you know? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up on the street, on the block where a lot of the novel unfolds. I just figured, what the heck, I know the geography there, so I'll just set it there. But yeah, right in that time period, I grew up in a three-decker, in a two-bedroom apartment. My mom and my dad slept in one room, and there were six of us sleeping in the other room. And by the end of our time there, and it was kind of like that up and down the block. There were kids everywhere. You know, you spent a lot of time on the street. The kids you knew on the street sort of became an extended family for you. And so it was fun for us. I don't know how much fun it was for my parents, but it was certainly fun for us. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot going on. I mean, I tell people that if you took a picture of 20 of us that were hanging out on the corner playing ball or hanging out on the street, about half of them will have gone on to have incredible lives, to have families and businesses and careers. And another third to a half, also wonderful people, were dead or in prison by the time they hit 30. Hmm. And that was just the reality of the life there. And none of us were aware of the various ways that life would diverge and branch off at that time. And so, but that's what happens. And why one kid goes one way, one kid goes another way is one of the themes in the book. Sometimes it's just a matter of wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
It's just as easy as that.
Well, so tell me, I mean, you kind of hinted at this, but tell me more, because I'm curious. I mean, the two main characters in the book, Kevin Pierce and Bobby Scales, who I introed very briefly at the top of this conversation. Kevin, you know, he does go on to bigger and better things. Bobby, as you write, he sort of survives the foster care system and stays in the neighborhood. I mean, did you specifically know young people like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I remember being 12, 13 years old and sitting there and talking to kids that I grew up with who just could see no life beyond, you know, what their parents had and what had gone on in the family and beyond Brighton. And, you know, they would say, well, I lived here, you know, I'm born here, I'm going to live here, I'm going to die here. I'm going to work on cars, or I'm going to work on this, or I'm going to be a carpenter. And I'm like, well, what about college, and what about this, and what about all these other possibilities in life? And some kids were open to that, some kids weren't. Some kids were pretty matter-of-fact about, no, this is what I'm going to do, and this is going to be my life. And they weren't sad about it, or angry, or bitter, or they're just very, very matter-of-fact about it. And, you know, some of that, I don't know exactly why one person feels one way about themselves and, you know, someone feels differently, but you certainly had some of that in the neighborhood. And then there were other kids who were just, you know, frankly, looking to get out or looking for education or looking for an opportunity to live a little bit larger life.
Yeah. So you set the first part of the book, again, in the mid-70s, right around the time of busing. So race does play a very strong role in the novel, Brighton. In the second part of the book, Kevin's girlfriend, I believe, she's an African-American ADA who was also bused. That's an experience that you actually had, right?
Well, yeah, I was voluntarily bused. I mean, yeah. I went to Boston Latin School, which is a, your audience probably knows, founded in 1635, yep. Oldest public school in the country, and changed my life and changed the life of countless other Bostonians. But it's an exam school and it's a voluntary school, but you do get bused. I took a bus every day across the city to get there. And my last 3 years at Latin School were the first 3 years of forced busing in Boston. And certainly taking a bus across the city and then going to Latin school. And right across the street from us was Boston English at the time, which was primarily African-American. And there was certainly tension between the two schools. There was, series of incidents, out in the street and just in the neighborhood. And I remember a couple days where we had some police in the school and some metal detectors in the school and things like that. It was nothing like the two epicenters of, Salty and Charlestown and the stuff that was going on there. But if you were in the neighborhoods and you're in the public school system, you certainly felt that tension. You felt it in Brighton. I mean, you felt it everywhere in the city. There was all of this racial tension and continuing series of incidents over really a couple of years. And a lot of kids at Latin School that I knew in my class dropped out. They dropped out of, quote-unquote solidarity with what was going on in other parts of the city. And they never came back. Mm-hmm. And so, what happened to them and what happened to their lives, I don't know. But it certainly was a big part of my growing up at that time. And I think anyone who was in the Boston public school system at the time. I mean, at the time, honestly, I remember thinking at 13 years old that this was a fatally flawed plan. I really felt like they were taking a bunch of poor kids from one underperforming school and busing them to another underperforming school in the city. And why not take all of the poor kids, black and white, and put them on buses out to Newton and Wellesley and Brookline and where all the good schools are anyways. So I think I saw it more as a socioeconomic problem as well as a racial problem.
Yeah.
And that wasn't happening at that time. And so eventually, the whole thing just kind of imploded.
Yeah. You've had a really interesting career, Michael. You were a lawyer, right? And then an Emmy Award winning television producer. And you've produced a bunch of series about cold cases, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes.
Yeah. So and then obviously you've written other very well received novels, crime novels. But most of those were notably the series about Michael Kelly, a former Chicago cop. They're all set in Chicago.
Yes.
You've got this well-developed career. I'm curious why now felt like the right time to return to Brighton as finally the right time to write this book.
I don't know. I guess I just wanted to write a childhood book. The Kelly novels deal with kind of what I call institutional crime. Mm-hmm. The mayor, like big issue crime, the mayor, downtown, city hall. And I covered that in Chicago, and I've covered a lot of major crime stuff around the country. I've interviewed a lot of cops, a lot of killers, been on death row, been in a lot of big time lockups. And the Kelly books, which I love, reflect that reality, my reality as an adult. And I wanted to write a book where it was reflecting more of my childhood and more of just a different sort of sensitivity. And I really wanted to capture Brighton because I really felt like, I feel like those neighborhoods, all of them, Salty, Charlestown, Brighton, all of them have been sort of gentrified.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I saw is gone, has rubbed away with time. And that's not a bad thing, but they're not there. And so one of the wonderful things that writers try to do is capture a period of time and just sort of pin it to a page and then close that book and just capture it there so that when a reader opens it a year from now or 10 years or even 100 years from now, it just pops up off the page and comes to life again and fills up the room.
Yeah.
And, you would love to be able to do that even just once or twice in your novels. And so I really wanted to try and capture a little bit of Brighton, a little bit of the authenticity of what that time was like. in this particular book. Among many other things I was trying to do, that was certainly one of my goals.
Well, so that's really interesting because, of course, the second half of the book, the latter portion of the book takes place in 2001, right? Mm-hmm. Or just after 2002.
Yeah.
2002, yeah. So you bring it forward in time a lot. But, of course, one of the themes and the thing that brings Kevin and Bobby back together is that the past is never fully past with the two of them.
So
that made me wonder, you're right. These neighborhoods in Boston have been very profoundly transformed and are changing, it seems, ever faster with every passing year. But is there still the sense of the past for people like your family who have lived in the neighborhood for so long? I mean, when you go back, what do you see? What do you feel when you're there?
Well, I'll be back next week, so I'll see if all the locks have changed. And I know they're still about. No, I think so. More so than any other city, I think Boston is very, very much, you tell me, very much attuned with their past.
Yeah.
I mean, Boston people, whether it's a sports team or politics or the geography of the place or, the Irish in Boston know more about their Irish heritage than anywhere I know in the country. And so, Boston is a city that understands and embraces and loves its past. And yet, in many ways, I think it's also haunted by it and defined by it in a way that sometimes is troubling. When you look at all the films and the novels that have been done about Boston, and there have been a lot of wonderful ones, that theme is always there a lot. The past coming back all the time, because especially when you get into the neighborhoods, it's not just the big city. Each neighborhood has its own defined sort of mood and atmosphere. And everybody in the neighborhood, if you grew up in that neighborhood, they know every street, they know every block, they know every family, and you live that. And sometimes you can't escape that. And like I said, that can be both a blessing and a curse. And sometimes people try to escape it, and they spend their whole life just living in that shadow. So I think that's a big, big part of Boston just being drenched in its own history, both for good and bad. And it's endlessly fascinating, I think, to writers to think about that and write about it.
So what about the crime novel aspect of it? Because it is a crime novel. Yeah. One reviewer described it as blood-soaked. We were trying to find a portion of it for you to read, which would be radio-friendly. We're having a bit of a trouble doing that. Why do you think people are... So you just wrote about the attraction as a writer, but why do you think people are so attracted as readers to reading crime novels?
I've done a lot of stuff in the real world of crime. Okay, I've interviewed a lot of cops, a lot of killers, a lot of serial killers, and I can't tell you how many people come up to me for Cold Case Files, the series that I did, and want to talk about stuff in just about killers, okay, and about people that I've covered, and the same thing with the novels. And I think it's because, honestly, everybody thinks and wonders if they have a little bit of that in themselves. I mean, nobody's pure good, no one's pure evil, and in your novels, you try to make your characters a wonderful mix. And that's kind of what goes on. That's what I try to do to books, and I think that's what people are really interested in. They want to look at Hannibal Lecter, and they want to say, wow, is there a little bit of that in me?
Well, I wonder what they'll see when they read about Bobby Scales. Michael Harvey, yeah. The new novel is called Brighton, and he will be talking about the book at two events next week at the Boston Public Library branch in Brighton on Tuesday and at the Brookline Booksmith on Thursday. We have information about that at radioboston.org or wbur.org/radioboston. Michael Harvey, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's great to talk to you. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.